feel like sometimes you might be in your own way when it comes to your dating life, and maybe you've just become so jaded and just hurt from the fucked up world that is dating? Well, if you do, I highly recommend Brené Brown's The Power of Vulnerability, which is a lecture series that you can get on Audible. If you use my promo code, you can try Audible for a month free. That's audibletrial.com/51stghosts. And make sure to check out the wide variety of the hundreds of unmatched titles that Audible has to offer. Hi guys, welcome to 51st Ghosts, where we do things that revolve around dating. Don't forget to follow on social media, my own Yas Mangasiri, and the Twitter for 51st Ghosts, which is 51st Ghosts. Today I have with Joey, who is an actor, model, and now a writer with me, and he's here to talk about some of his experiences. So, yeah. Hello, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Yasmin. How are you?
I've seen better days.
I mean, your crutches indicate exactly that, but
yes,
it's fine. Yeah.
But given the situation, I'm good. And you seem to recover from knocking yourself out.
Yeah. I took a pretty big fall myself recently, so I understand the tribulation. That's the only word for it, is tribulation. But it's okay. It only keeps us down for a minute.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of keeping it down for a minute, do you have any fun, crazy, wild dating stories you want to start with?
It's not even a dating story. It's happening right now. It's happening right now. Because you said keeping it down, it reminded me of going to the bars here in West Hollywood. My friends and I, we've been going to watch Drag Race. And for some reason, I fall into this strange habit where I see this one guy over and over again. And we hang out when we're at the bar. We hold each other's hands. We make out when we're at the bar. And then we leave. And I see him every Friday. And we do the same thing. I learned his name this week.
Oh, nice.
But this is like the fourth episode that we do this now. And I think next week I'm going to get his phone number.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like it. So he's not just like the Drag Race boyfriend.
I don't know. He might be. It depends on how the finale goes.
It is funny how that happens. I was talking to some people about one night stands and how like it's this really weird. The way they end is almost like you're dating, but you know you're not gonna ever see them again.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Where you're like, this was nice. Like, let's do it again soon. And then you like walk them or to their car or get them an Uber. And
it's strange. My last one night, which is actually a rare occurrence for me, I ended up in North Hollywood, and in the morning he says, "Oh, I'll drive you home." I said, "That's unorthodox, sure." And he drove me home. A couple hours later, he said, "Hey, how's your day?" And I thought I was never going to hear from him again, quite honestly. So I was surprised, but I answered and I said, "My day has been good. How's yours?" He's like, "Oh, just doing some errands." I'm like, it's very strange casual relationship talk. I say to him, "Hey, thanks for the ride home this morning. You brought me back down from the valley." And he said, "Oh, I had nothing better to do." Ladies and gentlemen, this is me looking shocked right now. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And I texted back and I said, "Well, I won't flatter myself. Never mind." And then we broke up. Then we proceeded to break up from our one-night stand.
It's like a day-and-a-half night stand.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, that was so long-lasting. I'd already picked colors and had the cake tasting in line. Oh, so good. You would have loved it.
Yes. Have you ever had any dates that are gone crazy?
Dates themselves that have gone crazy? Oh, my God, I love this story. Wait, I just remembered him. So, I don't use the dating apps anymore. I believe in meeting people organically. By organically, I mean in the produce aisle. And by the produce aisle, I mean picking avocados. Because, if you eat avocados, yes, you're in. Sold. So this was one of my last stints on a dating app. I met this really nice Greek guy. He lived close. I was in the neighborhood, too. He goes, "Hey, do you want to grab some dinner?" So I said, "Okay, great." He said, "I hope you know I'm going to be nervous." I said, that's fine. I might be nervous, too. So I walk over to the restaurant. It's like a couple blocks from where I used to live. I see him. We sit down. And I immediately notice something's wrong. something's going on with this gentleman. So we order our meal, and the food comes, and I'm just eyeballing him. I can't put my finger on it, but he's, like, looking at me, but he's not looking at me. I know. It's confusing. So, like, one eye is deadly focused on me, and the other one's, like, has a mind of its own.
Oh.
And it's, like, wandering, scanning the room. It's very strange. It's very cartoonish, actually. And so I figured, okay, maybe he only, like, is semi-interested in me, so I'm going to focus on the eye that's focused on me. Like, I'm going to talk to it, I'm going to wink at it, you know, give him a good smile, all that bullshit. The whole date progresses, and this doesn't change. He doesn't stop with the one eye shifting and the other eye, like, dead on me. It doesn't stop. I finish my meal, I'm down 3 beers, so my eyes are kind of doing their own thing now, too. And so we get to the end, the check comes. I go to the bathroom because I don't pay. I come back. When I come back after he's paid, he looks at me, he says, "So, I think you noticed something's different about me." I said, "Yes. Yes, I did notice. Am I going to get an explanation?" He goes, "Yeah, actually. And I noticed that you were focused on one side of my face. And the reason being is that eye is fake. I have a glass eye," he says. And I said, "Oh my God, this whole time I've been looking at your face. You have not even been looking at me." And he goes, "No, I couldn't bring myself to look at you." I said, "You're so fucked. Why did you start with that online, you weirdo?" And he said, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry. How could I make it up to you?" I said, "I challenge you to a game of darts, you one-eyed motherfucker." No, I was so... So we went over to the dartboard at this restaurant, and he obliterated me at darts. Obliterated. He goes, "Yeah, I do this all the time." Fuck. I was so mad.
Why did you challenge him to a game of darts?
Because I thought I could beat him. I thought he one eye. I was like, well, two eyes better than one. I'm like, no, because then you close your eye and you shoot. Same thing. I really set myself up for failure. We dated for 3 years after that.
Really?
No, no.
Oh my goodness. That's insane that you were just nothing. So you were like focused and giving all your energy into a piece of glass.
Yeah, a piece of glass. The only thing I didn't ask him to do was remove it to show me, but I thought of it for a second. I was like, I would like to see what's under there. Just like, is it like a worm going to crawl out from behind the eye? Is it just like that dead air? Like the sound you hear when Sandra Bullock is tumbling through space in gravity. Like that.
That's where she is, actually. Right. Oh my goodness. That's so uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable.
Because I feel like already it's, like, weird, and you're like, you gave him the benefit of the doubt. Oh, he has, like, a lazy eye or something. Like, something's wrong with his good eye. It's just that he will not look at you.
Yeah, I was like, maybe they're in disagreement. Maybe they had a little bit of a discussion before they got here. Right. You know? But, no.
Yeah. I feel like that's something I would probably, if not put on a dating profile, I'd like tell someone up front just to, you know what I mean?
Well, I can't put on my dating, you can't prepare yourself for things like that. I can't write on my dating profile like everything that's ever been wrong with somebody. If I have a Tinder account and then you go there and it says must have two good eyes, like you're like, what the fuck did this guy run into to have to say must have two good eyes?
Well, I mean, from the guy's perspective. Like, well, yeah. If he was just like, just so you know, I have a glass eye.
Right.
And then you go in and you're like, okay, you have a glass eye.
Right. So that I'm prepared for.
I wonder if it was like a new thing though. Because like, I feel like...
Whole life.
Really? And that whole insecure... Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
It's like, I would assume that if one's had it for so long, they would be like, this is who I am.
A little more upfront about it. Right, I mean, I've dated deaf guys, and it's not something you notice immediately. You can't detect someone's deaf when you look at them. But, you know, in a few seconds into conversation, it comes up. You're like, oh, wow, you can't hear me at all. You know, let's figure out how to communicate here. And so what happens is that there's certain things that you learn to, you know, not necessarily, like, forgive. You navigate certain challenges.
Yeah.
Just like in the rest of your life, you navigate, you know, every day you wake up, you have to navigate this decision-making process. So you meet people and, like, okay, you're like this, A, B, C, and D. I accept this. I have to work around that. You have to work around my flaws, although I have no flaws and I'm perfect.
What's your sign?
I'm a Libra.
Okay.
I'm a Libra.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Indecisive.
When you've gone out on a couple dates with deaf guys, you didn't know they were deaf when you first either met them in person or when you, like, Was it your like produce aisle meeting and it just kind of, you didn't know at first, or did you meet them online?
It was one of the first times I had ever met somebody in the flesh, like in person, naturally. Mm-hmm. My roommate's parents are deaf, which means he's a CODA, child of deaf adults. And so he invited me to California School for the Deaf in Riverside to organize a summer camp for deaf and hard of hearing children and their hearing families. So I went with him. I'm a musician. I play violin and I sing. And we wrote a song that I translated into English and Spanish. And then he created the signs for them. And we would teach the parents the sign. And I sang the song. Mm-hmm. So when I went to the camp, I had no idea how to sign. I'd never signed in my life. I'd never met a deaf person. Lo and behold, the second morning comes over. I see this beautiful boy. I'm still kind of in love with him. I'm sorry. The beautiful boy walks in and he comes over to the director, who's now one of my good friends. And he's having a conversation with her. And I said, wow, he's beautiful. Because I know he can't hear me. Wow, he's beautiful. So my friends at the table start laughing. One of the hearing mothers. And he sees us laughing. And he asks the director, what are they laughing at? I want to know what they're talking about. Because it's rude to laugh if, you know, when you can't.
Right.
Yeah. If you laugh behind somebody's back, they're like, what are they laughing at? I want to know. Like, mm-hmm. Is it about me? Is it about what's something in the room? Mm-hmm. So the director, I hate her living guts. She's my best friend now. She turns to me and she goes, he wants to know why you're laughing. And I could have lied. Oh, she told a funny joke, or we're going to do something after today's activities, blah, blah, blah. But I said, no. I looked at her and I said, oh, I said he's cute. And she turned around and she looked at him dead in the eyes, and she said, he thinks you're cute. And I died. And I ran away. I was like, I can't. He looked at me, and I ran. I couldn't talk to him. I was like, I don't know sign language. I don't know what I'm doing here. It was horrible. A couple hours later, after lunch, he comes up to me with his phone and a written note, and introduced himself on his phone. That night, I learned how to sign. That night, I was like, nope, can't do it. I cannot live my life writing notes to each other on our phones. So I learned sign, and then we went on a date the next week, and then we went on another date the next week, and it just kept going for a while.
That's amazing.
It was nice. Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah, that's really cool and funny and cute. That's such a great way to like start off a relationship. Right.
So from that point on, like I really struck myself from the dating app game, in the sense that there's amazing people right in front of us all the time, and the same people that are on the apps, they're on Tinder, they're on Grindr, they're on Bumble, there's all kinds of apps now. The same people that are on those apps live close to us, and they go shopping, and they go to the bar, and they go hang out with their friends at restaurants. Go see them, go look at them. And when you're out, put your phone down and look up, make eye contact, you'll find somebody. That's how I am now.
Yeah, I like that. How was it? How long were you guys together for?
About 6 months.
How was it navigating? Because obviously you were able to pick up sign language. So if you were hanging out with his friends, you could.
It was hard. It's very difficult. It's getting to a place where you're comfortable being in a conversation independently is very difficult in sign. Especially in the sense that sometimes people see a new signer or they see a hearing person learning sign and they're like, no. They want nothing to do with it. Hmm. You know, one day I was at the beach with some of his friends, and I had been signing all weekend. You know, all of his friends were deaf. His mom was deaf. His sister was deaf. His brother was deaf. Like, everyone was deaf. So it was just sign, 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 sign. And one girl turned around and started signing to me, just having a chat. And I looked at her and I said, I'm sorry, I don't understand anything you're saying right now. I'm so tired of signing. Like, my brain isn't understanding what's going on here. And she just ignored me. And she just blew me off the rest of the day. And it's little moments like that that really like start to dig at me.
Yeah.
Being in the relationship. It was difficult for him too, in that, you know, we would get around my hearing friends and they would just blah 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 blah, and they couldn't sign and I couldn't interpret.
Yeah.
So he would just stand back and get lost around me and my friends. So that was another challenge. So it was just very difficult, but it was just us. Magic.
Yeah.
You know, we can sit in our own space, watch TV, and just talk to each other. So that was fun.
Yeah, that's good. That's hard, though, if you're trying to build something more.
Yeah.
trying to merge worlds. And you said you've dated multiple deaf guys, right?
I dated a second deaf boy. Beautiful boy as well. Super sweet. That's the thing about the deaf. They're so sweet. And they're so understanding, especially when you're talking to somebody in that space when you're signing. The sign space is from right above the level of your eyes to your belly button. Mm. And for the most part, what the hands are doing is kind of just indicating what you mean. But the expression's always on the face. Mm. So when you're having a conversation in sign, you are deadly focused on that person's face. And so that's something that creates a certain level of intimacy that I think hearing relationships don't have.
Yeah.
Because in a hearing conversation, like right now, I can look away from you and it's okay. I can go to the next room and continue this conversation.
Yeah.
But when we're signing with each other, we have to be here. We have to be present. So there's a certain level of intimacy that comes with that. And I think I've really learned to appreciate that in conversations. Mm-hmm. And that I always try to look my friends dead in the eyes. It makes people uncomfortable sometimes, actually. They're like, stop looking at me. I said, you're beautiful. Let me look at you. But yeah, I did it a second boy. And super sweet. It didn't work because he was long distance. And there's a whole world of variety within the deaf community. There's deaf that are, you know, exclusively friends. And they date deaf. And they marry deaf. And they have deaf kids. And there's deaf that, you know, have hearing parents that put them in hearing programs and their parents know sign and they have hearing friends and they're very well adjusted. Some deaf use hearing aids, some deaf don't use hearing aids, some deaf get cochlear implants, some deaf don't. So it's like this whole spectrum within the deaf community of just how deaf you are.
Yeah.
In some instances, what they call it internally.
So. How was it with the experience? I mean, obviously it'd be secondhand, but I'm curious how it would be growing up, because obviously it's already hard growing up gay.
Yeah.
And then to grow up deaf is difficult, and then to be both, to have a cross-sectional of, like...
That's something beautiful that I learned very quickly. Within that community, and one of our friends educated me on that recently, I went to visit San Diego, where my first deaf boyfriend was from, and I was talking to my friends down there. I said, isn't it strange for you guys to be hanging out with your friend's ex? And like, no, not really. The deaf community is so small, it's going to happen. We're going to run into each other. We have to be accepting of things. You know, they have a bunch of friends that are trans, non-binary, and everyone's very open-minded. They're like, at the end of the day, we're all deaf. Like, that's our uniting factor. So whether the kid grows up straight or gay, his twin is straight, you know, and non-conforming or, I don't know, he just doesn't identify orientation personally. So it's one of those things that I learned very quickly, especially with the deaf. They said everything that we encounter within our community, it's kind of our obligation to accept it.
Yeah.
Because outside of being deaf, that's just who you are.
Right.
So I like that open-mindedness. That actually taught me a lot about the way I feel about the world today. Because I did grow up in a very safe and close Republican household.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Hard to believe. I very quiet, conservative, Hispanic household. And that was strange for me. You know, coming out was a very strange experience. So now, like, I have to, like, really throw myself into different worlds and learn about them.
Yeah.
And always keep an open mind.
That's beautiful. I love that. Speaking of being Hispanic, has that played a factor within dating in the gay male community?
Oh yeah. I have such a leg up on everyone else. Like, oh, you're bilingual, that's so exotic. It's like hot sauce. I love it. Pour it in my ears, they say. Oh, it's great. I love being Latin and gay. It's hilarious.
I mean, that's great, because for most people I've talked to who aren't white within the gay dating world, like, they have, like, such a problem with it.
Are you kidding me? Everyone thinks I have maracas and, like, an accordion in my house. It's amazing. I do have maracas, but Jesus.
I didn't know an accordion was a Hispanic thing.
It's a Mexican thing.
Because of the mariachi bands.
Right. Especially here in California, they want it to be an accordion. Right. But, like, in Miami, like, oh, it's a trumpet or some shit.
I love mariachi bands. They're so good. Disneyland has an all-female one in California Adventure.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's great. I love the music.
I have a lesbian friend of mine at the gym that plays at El Floridita. She's a Latin trumpet player.
Nice.
And she just got back from a 3-month cruise tour with her band.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it's an all-lady Latin band, too.
I love it. Is that something that, like, from my experience of, like, dating someone who is half Latina, the gender roles are very, very, seem staunch in, like, the Latin community? Is that something you've had to navigate yourself?
Oh, yeah.
Because I wouldn't say you're, like, extremely effeminate, but you're not, like, some, you know.
I land in this strange balance between feminine and masculine, and I kind of like being there.
I feel like we live in the same area.
Yeah. You live there, too, yeah. I know. Like, this weird middle range where we can vary depending on what the occasion requires and things like that. But the gender role question is very dear to me because my parents live in a very gender role specific household. Like, my mom is a traditional Latin woman. She cooks, cleans, and does a little bit of work. She works at an elementary school as a teaching assistant for a couple hours a day. You know, it's a little cute thing for a Latin woman to do, help the kids. But at the end of the day, she was a homemaker, and my dad was the moneymaker. And that's exactly how I grew up understanding. Like, I always knew, like, somebody's role in the house is going to be to care for the house, care for the kids, care for the pets, cook, clean, maintain. And then there's another role that's going to leave the house and make money and interact with the world out there. Mm-hmm. And I'm at a point where I gave myself the feminine role for my future. I picked a role and I was like, oh, I'm going to be kept. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to take care of kids and a dog. And I'm going to have a beautiful, glamorous household in the hills. And then as I got older, I forced myself into the masculine role of what I wanted, my perception of things. Oh, I'm going to have a great career. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to be popular. I'm going to be charismatic and attractive and tall and brown because I am. So, you know, that I spent some time in that range of emotion. And now I'm entering a place where I'm finally coming clean between the two worlds. And I'm realizing I will be able to share this with somebody one day. In which, you know, we can both step out of the house and make money, be charismatic, tall, blonde hair, blue eyed. I can dye my hair and get contacts. Okay. And be amazing, charismatic people out there and then come home and, you know, build a home together. You know, that was a journey. I'm 28 now. Like, it's taken some time for me to come to that place.
Yeah. How has that affected your past relationships? Or who you've been attracted to?
Right. I don't know. I thought I used to have a type. But then I realized I didn't have a type. And that what attracts me about people is their spirit. And primarily the spirit of how they treat their friends and loved ones. That's like my ground level, because the way I approach my life now is I adopted this leaving high school and said, I want to treat people exactly the way I would like to be treated. And the way I want to treat people, the way I want to live my life is laughing. I want to make people laugh. I want to make people happy, and I want to make people comfortable with who they are when they're around me. And if you can do that with your friends, I think that's really beautiful. And I think that's sexy. So that's my foundation for what I look for in people. And then afterwards, like, well, I guess I'm learning how to do this now as I'm dating, is really approach the important topics of, you know, what kind of a life do you want to live? You know, what's your future going to be like? Are you going to have kids? Are you going to have a career? Some people don't want to have a career. They want to work in an office for the rest of their lives, and that's fine. You know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm entering this that point in my life where I'm deciding the kind of partner I'm going to have. Now I know what kind of partner I want to be. Mm-hmm. Now I have to realize what kind of partner I want to have. And then they'll come to me. It'll manifest.
Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting entering into the late 20s.
Yeah.
I don't want to admit that's called that because I'm about to enter them in like a month. But it is interesting. I've been thinking on past relationships lately, and it's like, you know, I feel like I dated what you think you want as like a masculine typo, like the sexy girl who's down but can be like kind of fun. I was just thinking about how like I'm like, I don't want that at all now. Mm-mm. And it's only been like not even 2 years since my like last relationship, and like the type of girl I want now is like or see myself being with is so completely different. And I think it is entering into that phase of, like, who can you actually build, like, a stable life with?
Right.
Which is interesting in its own weird, I don't want to get old right now.
it's a certain maturing process that takes place without you noticing.
It is, yeah. I remember I had this friend who, maybe she's changed her mind, but there's this guy who really liked her. We were in acting class, and they were, you could tell they were really, really good friends. And, you know, if she's just not interested, that's fine, end of story. But she would always bring up how short he was. And, like, my one friend and I were always like, you won't care in a couple years as much, you know. Like, I can understand that sometimes women don't want to feel, like, big-bodied or insecure, but we're like, that's not going to be important soon.
You get over it.
Yeah.
And I always thought of that, especially before I met. I used to think I had a type until I met somebody that was nothing I had ever imagined as a type. And I fell hard for that. And that's when I realized the things you're looking for are just this production in your mind. It's this Hollywood sensationalized version of this Ken doll TV show human that you're looking for. And that's not real. And when it happens, when you're dating somebody, you're never going to know that you're going to fall for A, B, C, and D, but you're gonna.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen whether you're ready or not. So if it's going to be a short guy, it's going to be a short guy. If she's going to be lipstick, she's going to be lipstick. If she's going to be butch, she's going to be butch. Mm-hmm. You never know. It's all in the spirit at the end of the day.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I've seen my friends, like, not even fathom the idea of somebody who would be great for them just because they're not brunette or they're not, like, X or they're not Y. And it's just, like, such small details where it's, like, is that really important at the end of the day? Because it's bizarre. There's this thing. I have to look and see if I've done an episode on it because I need to, but there's this thing called a love map, and I don't know why it's called that because it's described as a checklist. So.
The love map checklist.
So the love map is a checklist of qualities that we may or may not know that we have, and if every single thing isn't checked off, you can't fall in love. And it can be things from moral political beliefs to the color of someone's eyes or their hair. And it's just this thing, it's changing constantly. And it is one of those things that's where that line is, and I guess the person's experience of why someone being brunette or tall is so heavily on their checklist. That's someone who's perfect for them emotionally, spiritually, doesn't get the check.
Right, we'll fall through.
Yeah, and sometimes it's things that people don't even know are on the list that they have no idea that's a requirement for them.
I need to do this. I need to do this because half the time I get into these relationships and we can't stand each other 10 minutes in, but damn, it was fun. So I need to know what I don't know.
Right, you're like, why did this happen? I'm the same way. I guess I gotta be more careful of the people I fall for. Just like, it is like a weird thing because I feel like in some way, I feel like it's nice to meet people, like you said, in the produce aisle, because it's like, you can find their energy and you can feel like something about them
right
before you, like, we're going on a date and we're going to be awkward because it's a date, so we'll probably go out again because we think each other are attractive, maybe, right. And it's just this weird thing that grows, and it's like, I feel like I would have avoided so many bad, not just romantic relationships, but friendships, if all the cards were on the table from the beginning.
Right.
Because there is this thing like where they can like lure you in, and then all of a sudden they're like, "You're fucking crazy."
Yeah.
But I'm like attached, so now like, what do I do?
Especially coming off living in this online world that we live as, and I get it within the LGBT community, there's a certain challenge with tracking each other down, especially outside of a space like West Hollywood. You know, the lines get really, really complicated when you're meeting people. Because here in LA, especially, it's simple. We can go out. I can eyeball somebody. I'm like, you must be gay. I'm going to talk to you. And if you don't turn out to be gay, I'm fine with it. But you do that in a lot of other places. That's not okay.
Yeah.
That's not okay. So, like, a lot of people will depend on the app game. And like you said, it doesn't always yield a normal human at the other end of the transaction.
Yeah.
And it's challenges like that that I have to sit back and realize it's happened to me. You know, or you get baited, or you meet somebody and they posted a picture from 10 years ago. I'm talking to you, pal. So it's this regularly occurring challenge, but there's nothing that will replace that organic human interaction. That's what I always tell my friends. Go out. I have so many friends that are like self-proclaimed homebodies and I have to drag them out of the house. They're like, oh, I need to meet somebody. I'm like, you're not going to meet somebody watching Tidying Up on Netflix for 6 hours. That's not going to help. Your house is going to look like a museum, but no one's going to be there to see it. So we need to go to this bar. We need to take you out. I got a job as a cater waiter for special events and I see people all the time, constantly. Every day I see brand new people. It's like this constant cycle of faces that I absolutely learned to love.
Yeah.
And there's you know, there's been fun times. There's been weird times, too. Just like on the apps, there's weird times, too.
What are some of your weird times?
Especially, like, big events. The caterer likes to give me drinks to pass around.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing like being a pretty person carrying drinks. I'm a pretty person, okay? I can say that. Thank you, microphone. Don't touch me. People think that I'm this curvaceous table that they can just lean up against and take advantage of. And I don't mind it to a certain extent. That's fine. These are crowded rooms. But, you know, hands travel. And I've turned around and said, excuse me, ma'am. It's rosé, not boy holding tray. Take a drink, move on. The audacity. Oh, I'm so sorry. You're just so close to me. You smell wonderful. And then I can't help it. Thank you. It's Prada.
Oh,
it's Lord. Not Prada. It's Prada knockoff.
Have you gotten any dates through catering? Because I've done it as well, the catering thing. I feel like that's like the fantasy of like you'll finally meet that rich person who can get you out of catering.
It's not something I fantasize about. Actually, it's not something I thought of until you just said it. What if I meet somebody rich? I don't plan on that happening, honestly. I actually developed a crush on one of the other cater waiters, which was strange. of all the people to feel anything for, I decided to pick somebody in my same crappy income bracket. So, like I said, you never know what to expect. But yeah, I mean, there's a certain clientele that attends these events. And sometimes, you know, you get to a point where, actually it happened to one of my friends, an older producer was what I call monopolizing him during the event. And he's straight, this poor little guy, this little Australian guy, he's adorable, he's beautiful, like this dirty brown hair and glowing blonde eyelashes and blue eyes inside of those lashes. Stunning, stunning, he's surfer dude. And I kind of caught this happening and I walked over and said, hey, I need you in the kitchen. He's like, why? I'm having a conversation. I was like, no, I need you in the kitchen with me right now.
Oh.
And he's like, that guy was really nice. As we were walking, I was like, no, that guy was trying to get into your pants. He's like, really? I was like, yeah. And I wish he was trying to get into my pants because this is his movie. They're like, but no, he picked you and you're oblivious. So it does happen.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I actually had a friend at the country club I work out. Or work, used to work at. It was, I'm trying to think if it was a wedding or like a member event. But she ended up actually going out with a man she met at the event. And it seemed good until, you know, a few dates in, he was expecting something. And she was like, that's all he saw at the end of the day was like a.
Yeah.
But I was just like, it is weird, like that power dynamic. Because I feel like it's always one of those things where, like, oh, is there a lesbian here at this wedding? Is she rich? Get me out of this situation.
Save me, rich lesbian. Save me from myself and my poverty. Trust me, I think of that all the time. I'm like, not at the events, but like at restaurants. I'm like, I used to do this with one of my friends when she lived here. She moved to Seattle. I love you. And you know who you are. We would go to Rodeo Drive and sit at a cafe. And we would call it Thursday Glam Cafe time. And we would get into our best. I would shave, do my hair, you know, put on a little foundation because I'm not that young anymore. Skin's getting a little rough. And we would go and we'd sit at a cafe opposite each other, just like at separate tables. And we would just watch the rich people walk by and try to make eye contact with them and see which one was would get married first. None of us did. But it was a fun thing to do. So.
That's so, oh my God, because I've been to Beverly Hills like a few times and like I went for like a meeting and I wasn't thinking I was going to Beverly Hills. And it wasn't like I was dressed not nicely, but I was in joggers and skateboarding. The looks I got, oh my gosh, I was waiting to get kicked out of that city.
Oh yeah.
I was just like, I'm dressed nicely, clearly not homeless.
Oh no, we had to dress because we knew, we went one time, we were just walking around and definitely... I definitely think there's somebody with a walkie-talkie following us the whole time. But, so we went back, and I said, Samantha, oh, I shouldn't have said their name, whatever. Samantha. I said, Samantha, we're going back to Beverly Hills, but you better wash that motherfucking Kia real nice.
Oh, man. I actually have dated a couple of girls who, like, came from money because I went to Catholic high school.
Oh, yeah.
It's weirdly uncomfortable, actually, having... I don't know why, because, you know, there's just certain... things that like aren't important that we make important for like no reason, because like one of my last exes, I guess I came from more money than her, not that we're not rolling in it,
but how you doing?
Hi, ladies. I'm on disability right now.
Good income, girls. Swoop.
But you know, and she always felt insecure about it, and I'm like, I'm from the suburbs of a regular area, and like, you know, it's Orange County, so okay. But
right.
But then I, on the flip side, I dated my high school girlfriend. It wasn't as, like, whoa, but, like, she literally lived in, like, a chalet. It was, like, ridiculous. But I think I was so used to being around rich white people at that point. Because, like, when I first went to Catholic school, I was like, why is everyone white and, like, rich? Because I went to, like a heavy Latino school before that. So it was quite a culture shock. I was like, there are only white people around me. But then by the time I was 16, I was like, okay, everyone's rich and white. And then I'm like, that's just where I live. And then a few years after high school, I ended up actually connecting with a girl I went to high school with on a dating app. And we went out. And like, I mean, my parents' house is like a two-story house. It's not small.
Yeah.
I felt like I lived in a sardine can after I went to like her parents' place. Like her dad just bought like a Tesla. I mean, it was huge. I think, like, three of my houses could have fit in there, like, on the ocean, the gay community. I was like, what is... Like, because I completely forgot she went to Catholic school. It wasn't even on, like, my radar that this is how people actually live. Right. Because, like, most people don't. And it was a weird thing. I felt, like, really uncomfortable and for some reason being around. And I don't know if it was a thing where, like... Then we get self-conscious if, like, she wanted to pay for everything and be like, why? Because I'm not as rich as you. You want to pay for all my stuff. Right. And it's, like, a coffee. Or I don't drink coffee, but, like, tea or something. Right. It's, like, $3.
Like something simple.
It's not like she bought me, like, a cashmere sweater that I wouldn't be able to wear because I'm allergic to sheep. But...
You're allergic to the sheep?
I'm allergic to wool, so I assume I'm allergic to sheep.
Oh, they're so cute, though. No, I've dated money. I dated money. My first boyfriend back in Florida, I mean, I made a mean face.
He did. It was a little disturbing.
Thank you. He lived in a gated community with a country club, and the house was massive. Honestly, like, I haven't been in a house that big since. And the emotion that came with it, because when we met out. And then... I realized something was going on when I got into a Mercedes-Benz to go on the date. And I was like, oh, shit, something's going on here.
You're like, who'd you steal this from?
Right. I was like, what's going on here? What do you do? Where are we going? I went to a beautiful 5-star restaurant. Michelin stars were involved. And I just kept thinking to myself, I'm way in over my head. I told him, I said, excuse me, sir. I'm not paying for this meal. I told them straight, I was like, excuse me, sir, I'm not paying for this meal. I don't know where you think you're taking me or how much do you think I make. And he looks at me and goes, it's fine, I got this. So that emotion that comes with dating money, or, you know, being with somebody that is in a different income bracket as you, it's a struggle. It's definitely a conversation that has to be had.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's always... I mean, and I guess it makes sense. It's usually the person who has less money that's like, whoa, wait a second. Because I've definitely been in those situations where I'm like, where the fuck are we? Like, I'm not paying for this. Like, why would
even
you
choose so, this? I got caught in the situation once in that relationship where it was a bit of a discussion. And then the sentence came out, Well, I pay for everything. Well, I pay for everything. Wow. That damn near rocked the house. I could have brought heaven and hell together that day. I was so mad. And it's things like that that you don't want it to be an obstacle. You don't mean for it to become one. But after like this consistent exposure to it, it becomes something that is in the back of people's minds sometimes.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't, at this point, I wouldn't want to date anyone with an income that's so different from my own. So.
Yeah. I think I would just like to eventually marry someone who just has a stable income.
More stable than mine.
Yeah. Right. And both, you know, stable mind, stable income. Just being bartending, working off tips, and that precarious life, you know. But right. Yeah, it's...
But we have potential.
Absolutely, yes, yes. I don't... And hope, you know. I'm sitting here with a broken leg, so my options of looking into the future are a little like, oh, look, I have a broken leg next week, too.
Right. Your future is just between here and the bed. I right. get it.
That's, But no, I think there is an element of just, and some people like being taken care of. Some people fall into power dynamics, and that's a huge part of like when you're the cater waiter and someone's coming on to you that you're serving.
Right.
But I think money is a power dynamic as well.
Yeah.
Unless you really do, I think, subscribe to those gender roles. It's like, yes, you make more money than me because I'm always at home with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Which is totally fine. I was brought up that way as well. By the time I came around, my mom was able to be a full-time mom, which it's a luxury that a lot of women don't get to have.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's forced upon a lot of women. It is a thing. It's just another thing for people to have problems with in relationships.
Right, another thing. And at the end of the day, as long as you're okay with where you are and you and your partner have had the conversations, then I think by all means, if you need a gender role specific kind of relationship, go for it.
Yeah.
Live your life. Do you. Do you, boo-boo. And that's fine. Some people live off that. They thrive. I know my mom thrives in that environment. She loves it.
Yeah.
She cooks, cleans, has her bit of responsibility, and then she's like, no, your dad can fucking handle the rest of it. I'm a woman. Let him do the work. Shit. Not in as many words and with less profanity. She's a God-fearing woman of sorts. But, you know, in essence, that's what she means. I laugh when I talk to my parents because I always remember this one time. It's in the kitchen. And I could hear my mom talking to my dad. And my dad goes, wife, do you love me? And she goes, dinner will be ready soon. Wife, do you love me? She goes, we're married. It's been 30 years. But do you love me? She goes, you have two kids. But do you love me? I clean the house. And she will not say it. She will not say it. And then I asked them another time. I said, are you guys going to get divorced? And my mom looked at me and said, do you see how fat and old we are? Of course not. This is the only chance we've got. We're stuck. And it's little things like that that I kind of look forward to.
That's amazing. Well, I can see where you get some of your humor from.
Yeah.
Were there any other last stories you wanted to end on? Or I think we're reaching an hour soon.
If there's anything you want to ask, I'm an open book. I really am. I'm very available to tell all kinds of stories. That money relationship ended poorly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it did.
Was it soon after the...
We were together for 3 years.
Oh.
And it ended up being a very abusive situation in that the money became control and I became a very submissive, I can't even say second fiddle, I just a very submissive home-kept partner. And, you know, I always caution people when I see things like that. I said, you need to be careful with where you put yourself in a relationship. You need to find yourself somewhere where you're stable and you're able to care for yourself. You know, I was 21 back then, and I wasn't able to care for myself, so I fell into this trap that I set for myself. You know, I glamorized a lifestyle, and I ended up somewhere I didn't want to be for 3 years. So I always tell my friends, like, you need to watch out for yourself first and foremost, is what I always leave people with. Take care of your heart, take care of your finances, and then you can take care of your emotions, and then feed someone else's love. As long as you're feeding yours. So.
Yeah.
I don't want to leave you with that, but
I think it is a good note to end on. Something I'm should be doing by the time this comes out is in between episodes is actually I want to do a series of single me talking, because I was in an emotionally abusive relationship for like 3.5 years, and I don't think anyone talks about it enough.
Yeah,
it's not shown until like there's always like a physical aspect to abusive relationships and media and talking, even in school. I remember when they kind of talked about it a little bit. Never once did they bring up emotional abuse power dynamics. So I think it's something important to end on. And I think ending with the idea that you gotta take care of yourself first.
Yeah, take care of yourself, because you're more amazing than you think. I always tell my friends, strange relationship with their friends, they always say, oh, I don't like the way I look in pictures. I said, that's where it begins. You know, and I always tell them, I take pictures of my friends and I zoom in inch by inch on their face and I say, do you like your nose? Yes. Do you like your teeth? Yes. Do you like your skin? Yes. Do you like your hair? Do you like your eyes? Do you like your eyebrows? Yes, 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 yes. So you like yourself and you think you're pretty. So start there, you know, enjoy yourselves first and foremost. And then when you're ready, you invite other people into your life. Other than that, just take it easy.
Yeah.
Go drink, hook up with strangers, live your life.
Go get your drag race boyfriend.
Yeah, I wonder what his phone number is.
Just imagine what area code.
You just start dialing numbers and see who picks up. Maybe it's him.
I love it. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. And thank you, Joey, for joining us. You can follow him on social media as well.
On Instagram, I am at Joelito411. J-O-E-L-I-T-O 411. On all platforms, actually. Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter. That's it.
Yes. Find him, stalk him. And if you're still dating out there, good luck, because it's a ghost town.